spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken Petaluma, never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB. It is Michelle Anna Jordan in the flesh. Yep, it's me right here. And you're right there. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you've had a good weekend. Hope you were in the part of the county that got a little bit of that stuff falling from the sky yesterday. Wasn't it just delicious? I was in Fort Ross cooking and... oh, gosh, got there about 9:15. It had been raining about 15 minutes, and I think it rained really gently until about, 12:30, 1 o'clock. It was just great. But here we didn't get any rain in Santa Rosa yesterday, and it doesn't look like we got any in Sebastopol. Anyway, that little bit of it was really, really lovely. I have one of my favorite people in the world as our guest this evening. We're just going to let an introduction unfold as we talk. But one of the things that I just adore about Paula Downing is that she is a thinker. She's always thinking about things. And you run into her, farmer's market that she manages or just somewhere, and just this like brilliant observation about something or this really spot on concern about an element of farming, an element of the county, an element of the... environment pops up early on in the conversation, and it's just delightful. So we are taking this hour to get to know Paula a little bit more than maybe we do now, explore the past a bit, speculate about the future. And I want to tell you that today's music is all going to be from Elvis Costello. Elvis has a book out, and he is actually coming to... Northern California. He's going to be interviewed by Michael Krasny, and I'm sorry, don't get me started on that. Michael Krasny is not the person who should be interviewing Elvis Costello, but I'll leave that alone.
I've just mentioned it, then I'll leave it alone. Now that you know how I feel.
Yeah. So anyway, I have mixed feelings about how hugely venerated Elvis Costello is these days, because... he's mine. You know, back when he first came out and I adored his music instantly, so many of my peers at that time were, they hated that music. They wanted to listen to the Eagles or whatever. And there was just all this flack about Elvis Costello, all this rolling of the eyes, really bad, nasty press. And now all those same people are saying, I got first row seats to Elvis Costello, and it makes me cranky. because I was there first. Anyway, end of rant. That's what the music will be, just some of my favorites. And so, Paula, welcome back to Mouthful.
Hi, Michelle.
You just poured a little something into a glass. Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell me about that?
Well, it's the only liquor I had in my cabinet. It's cognac by somebody. French cognac.
So just a little cognac.
Cheers.
For the end of
yes.
the weekend. Okay.
Yes. We didn't bring a glass for.
Well, he can't. He's driving.
Oh, okay.
He can't.
Okay. Well, let me say before we go anywhere that today, for some reason, you must have been on people's mind, because I had somebody come up to me and say, boy, Michelle Jordan is on the top of her game right now. Isn't her writing amazing? And I was thinking about it.
Really?
That happened today. Because I was thinking about your yogurt piece today, which totally triggered a lot of thoughts in the one about making your own yogurt, or at least making your own.
Or buying that by the quart,
yeah.
not by 6 ounce containers.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was great today. And the person who said that is somebody who has very discriminating taste. So you should be flattered, because
wow.
she does not say good things about everybody that often.
I am flattered. That's so nice. That's a timely comment.
Yes, it was great.
It is welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, let's go with the yogurt article then first. And, my editor cut out some of the background of that story. That has been happening lately. It's never happened to me before. But I introduced it with a story about when I was living in Lakeville. This is the part that was omitted. And I lived out in the country. I lived I lived on the Henning Ranch across from Flukini, which Flukinis are now growing grapes. At the time, they may still have this part of it, they made dairy equipment. Mm-hmm. And their parents lived nearby and had a dairy farm. And I looked outside and there was a cat staggering. And this is a country lane, imagine. There was this cat staggering and its head was stuck in a discarded can of cat food.
Oh.
And picked it up and it fainted in my arms because it was out of oxygen.
Uh-huh.
And
really?
Yeah, if nobody'd been there, if I hadn't been there, it would have been found out.
Uh-huh.
You know, probably 15 minutes later. So we rushed it over. It turned out Andy Flukini was at work. He builds, like, you know, the what do you call them? The metal fences or whatever that the cows put their heads in when they're going to be milked, that sort of thing. So he's, you know,
stanchions?
Building that.
The stanchions?
Stanchions, is that what they're called? Okay.
Maybe, yeah.
And he got out his wire cutters and he cut through the metal of the can, and the cat took a deep breath, leapt out of my arms and into the rest of its life, never saw it again. And then driving home one night recently, I saw several skunks, and I've got a lot of skunks who live at my house. And then the next morning read that skunks and other animals are being killed by yogurt containers. That some of the Yoplait and a couple of other containers are just the right size to fit over their nose and mouth.
Uh-huh. And they go in after the yogurt and then get stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thousands, I guess, are dying. And got me thinking, why buy little containers of yogurt? Why do that?
Yeah.
You're paying more.
Yeah.
Paying
sure.
a lot more.
Yeah.
So then I just riffed off of that and I thought, you know, I know that mason jars became hip.
Yeah.
You know, for all kinds of things. And I don't bake cakes in mason jars in my microwave. I don't have a microwave.
And, no, me neither. Know. It's right there at breast height. That's why I don't have one.
Oh, there's a good thought, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I just have a little kitchen and I don't see any use for one. Anyway, I like mason jars when it makes sense. And it makes sense for a lot of things.
Yeah.
They're reusable.
Oh, for sure.
They just work beautifully for all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, they do.
So I thought, take your yogurt in a wide mouth mason jar,
yeah.
bite it in a quart, divide it up. You got your good for a week.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, that was perfect.
Well, you riffed off of that.
Yeah. Well, it's connected to all that's in the news right now about plastic, and you know, there's mounds of it in the ocean.
Oh, the stuff
from the
north
size
of
the state of Texas or whatever.
Yeah. North of Curry, in Hawaii.
Yeah.
One of the northernmost.
Yeah.
Westernmost, that huge thing of plastic.
Because the market's fallen out of the
Is that
recycling,
that's the part
market.
That I wanted you to, part of what I want you to talk about, because I haven't been following that.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it. I just know that the garbage collection company in the city of Santa Rosa, which is the Ratto Group, and I can't remember what they call themselves, but they are struggling, and they actually put out a notice this week. It might have been the same paper I read your article in, about how they have to be much more particular because they can't make money on plastic. So if they can't make it pay for itself, then they can't recycle it. Mm-hmm. And so every time, I mean, I've been trying to deplasticize for a couple of years, mm-hmm. ever since I first read about the mounds of plastic in the ocean sitting outside of China waiting to be recycled. Why they go to China, I don't know. But, you know, how environmentally sensible is that? I don't know that
So much of our trash gets recycling goes to
China. So anyway, so I've been trying to deplasticize. It's really quite challenging, but mm-hmm. you can make the choice all the time. I mean, there's some things I can't give up. I can't give up Strauss Greek yogurt, which comes in a plastic container.
Not the Greek, but the whole milk.
The whole milk yogurt, yes. And I can't give that up. And I haven't been able to give up his sour cream either. But a lot of I haven't bought a plastic bag since then.
What do you use for trash?
For trash? Mm-hmm. Paper.
You do?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes it gets wet and you have to double bag it. Yeah. But I use paper. I mean, at least paper will biodegrade.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, cardboard or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just don't buy plastic. And mm-hmm. it's very interesting because we're so dependent on it. It's so useful. And you just, mm-hmm. to deplasticize with your yogurt is an easy one.
Yeah.
The other one that drives me nuts is soap in the bath. Everybody's got pump soaps in the plastic. You know, use a bar of soap. What are you buying the plastic for? I mean, I want to scream about that. It's ridiculous.
I do not. And for dish soap, you can't really get away.
You can't get away from but it. But what I do, can't get away.
I buy a big one, and then a glass, a cute little glass jar with a pour top on it.
Uh-huh.
But in the bathroom, we use a bar of soap.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and while you're at it, get rid of the antibacterial soap. That's bad.
I'm scared of that stuff.
Well, it's making super bugs. You should be
really?
Scared of it. Yes.
Oh.
No one should be using antibacterial soap in a day-to-day. But let them use it in hospital places where they have to make sterile.
Yeah.
We should not be using bacterial soap. It's creating superbugs in part.
Really?
And it's also could be seen to be compromising our immune system. I mean, from the moment a baby's born, especially, it's one of the problems with babies who are born C-section.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a baby is born naturally, it's introduced to all sorts of bacteria and other things as it's exiting the mom.
Uh-huh.
And those things immediately begin to stimulate the immune system.
Yeah.
So does playing in dirt.
Yeah.
You know, eating mud when you're two and you don't know what that is. You know, the environment is not a hostile place.
Right.
And so many companies have set up this idea, I think, that the world is a hostile place.
Right.
Oh my God, we have to use bacterial soap before we touch the shopping cart, you know?
The little wipes that are everywhere now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, people use
And those wipes are not disintegrating. There's another huge problem.
Another huge problem.
I mean, this one is an enormous, enormous problem, but I don't think we'll go there unless we need something, because it's pretty disgusting.
Our garbage is... We have to be responsible for our garbage. It's shameful about our garbage. When they look at us in 10,000 years, if they were all around, they're going to go, oh my God,
what were these people thinking?
Right?
Yeah. So what are some, do you have any other little tricks for getting rid of plastic? Is it just deciding not to buy things?
I don't buy things with plastic, except if there are things I'm really attached to. And, you know, when I go to the market and I buy food, I bring it home and I put it, I have different collections of glass.
Mm-hmm.
So I just throw it in there.
Yeah.
And I don't think I have any other tricks. That's pretty much it. I don't buy it if I can possibly
help. Yeah, you just don't buy it.
If I can possibly help. Because I really don't know if it recycles. And so I can't stand that. So I try not to buy it.
Yeah, and a lot of things have gone from glass. It was really maddening a few years ago when Best Foods mayonnaise went from glass to plastic.
Yeah.
I'm still angry about that.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of them. Grape Poupon mustard went to plastic. Really upset about that.
Well, I guess I've had such a huge supply of Grape Poupon that I have. Oh, that's really awful.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, can I talk about anything I want?
Yep.
So I went talking about this particular subject about, you know, what's plastic, what's made, what's... But I went 2 weeks ago to a workshop in Marin called Grow Your Jeans, and it's part of the Indigo Project, and it's something that's not that well known, but one of the points they make is that in 1980... 70 or 80% of our clothing was made in the United States. And, you know, we all know L.A., San Francisco, New York. They were huge manufacturing centers. And now 2% of our clothing is made in the United States. So this
is Grow Your J-E-A-N-S.
Right. Okay. And it's the project. I mean, it's kind of crazy, really. This woman named Rebecca Bridges is growing indigo. I think Potter Valley, but I'm not sure. And it's about, I think, 10 months from beginning to end to go from indigo to the dye, to the woven fabric.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about indigo.
All I know is it's a plant. And it's actually what was I thought was the most interesting bit of information was that Levi Strauss, because Levi Strauss started in San Francisco, when they were first doing jeans, they were using real indigo.
They were using real indigo
at the beginning, and you know, not anymore, but at the beginning. So the idea, what this project has done is Rebecca's growing the indigo. Then she's got this sort of woman designer who made a lot of money, who's just now doing things that she thinks is fun. And she designed some jeans, and then she's got some guy who manufactures them in San Francisco. So we're getting jeans made out of indigo. That's why it was called Grow Your Jeans, because they're making jeans now from indigo grown in Potter Valley, sewn in San Francisco. So it was totally fascinating. I don't know how much they cost.
Okay, that was my question.
I don't know. They didn't say that. Uh-huh. But it's just the bigger concept of... you know, making your own yogurt, growing your own jeans, doing stuff yourself. That bigger concept is just such a exciting concept to me. People, you know, feel really good. I mean, I'm part of the free community Apple Press that Slow Food is doing. Mm-hmm. And when I go there and people bring their apples, they feel so good about making their own apple juice. It just feels good. And you feel like you're doing something really important, and it's so small.
And it's so deeply satisfying.
Totally.
I mean, if I walk outside and pick 6 or 8 leaves of sorrel to make a sorrel tabbouleh, it's so different than if I've gotten it even at a farmer's
market.
Even
at the market, right.
There's just another layer of connection, of purpose, of completion, satisfaction. It's something I really love.
Yeah. And the other piece about all this is one of the discussions at this workshop was about carbon. And the argument by this group, by the Indigo Project, is that I'm going to read a couple sentences. Current data from farming systems and pasture trials around the globe show that we could sequester more than 100% of current annual CO2 emissions with a switch to widely available and inexpensive organic management practices. So I thought that was so interesting, because that whole piece of shopping local, making your own yogurt, all that piece, it's not just about you doing something really good for yourself. It's about going toward the critical mass of making the planet safe. Because really, anything you read, you can't even read about global warming. You can't even read about it. It's so painful because it's so grim.
So
it's not just, it's not the small picture. It's also the big picture. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, taking that level of personal satisfaction to another level, I think that it's good psychological Valium to... In your own little world, to be doing as much as you can possibly do to live correctly,
not
dismissively, and not once you throw it away, you don't think about it anymore. Not having that sort of attitude, because you know we're all connected. Everything is connected. Everything. It's not a cliche.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I want to know more about this. Those sound like people that I would like to get onto.
Mouthful. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll make copies of this.
I would love to have them on Mouthful.
Yeah, they're really I mean, it makes you cry. It's so interesting. And Sally Fox was there. Do you know who Sally Fox is? She's Fox Fiber.
Anybody
her organic cotton story. I mean, she spent 10 years researching and developing organic cotton, being laughed at. Everyone thought she was a nutcase, right?
Where was she based when she was
Texas,
working?
Texas, I think. Okay. Yeah. And then, which a lot of cotton comes from Texas.
Yeah.
And so she did it. She did that. So when you think about that kind of, you know, sort of courage and fortitude and all that it takes to create something that organic, brown organic cotton, that's what she made.
And I'll tell you, organic cotton is not to be dismissed. It's I bought a quilt from Hazel.
Oh, you
Hazel
did.
Of Bodega Pastures.
Yeah.
I think it's been two or three years now. And I think it was after she was on Mouthful.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I did not know about wool for a long time is that it's hypoallergenic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's really important.
Yeah.
And I just decided to give it a try to see if it would help my allergies. And I think it does.
Yeah.
But I opted for organic cotton and
as the covering.
I mean, right. You still have to put it in a duvet or you're going to wear it out. But that organic cotton is just so, it's so soft and tender.
Uh-huh.
It's very different than the cottons that we're used to.
Yeah.
So that's a really great thing.
Yeah. Well, I have one of those. They're not cheap, but I have had it for like 20 years.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you invest in a good wool comforter, you'll have it forever.
Yeah,
they don't wear out.
No, and it's fine in the summer. It's warm in the winter. It's a great, one of the great articles of material stuff that I have is this wool comforter. Okay. You know?
Well, we're going to take a little musical break now. And when we come back, I want to explore your time involved in farmers markets, because I know it goes back a lot earlier than a lot of people know.
Okay.
He thought he was the king of America, where they bought Coca-Cola to slap vintage wine. I try hard not to become hysterical, but I'm not sure if I'm laughing or crying. I wish that I could push a button and talk in the past and not the present tense. And watch this hurting feeling disappear like it was common sense. It was a fine idea at the time. Now it's a real mistake. She said she was working for the ABC News. It was as the alphabet is she knew how to use. Her perfume was unspeakable. It lingered in the air like her eyes of fish who left the mementos of her face. Oh, I say you know him. Isn't that very fortunate for you? She showed me his calling card. He came further forth and there were more. Was the king of America, but it was just a boulevard of broken dreams, tricked to do with mirrors and with chemicals, the words of love and whispers and the acts of blood and screams. I wish that I could push a button and talk in the past and not the present tense.
It is Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan here on KRCB. I am in the studio with Paula Downing, a woman of many hats, all of them red, I think. Yes, all of them red. A nice thing. I'm curious, Paula. I cannot trace your history when it comes to farmers markets. I know that you were on the board for the Wednesday night farmers market. You were instrumental in getting West End Farmers Market formed. I think you launched the WIC Farmers Market. Mm-hmm. You managed the Santa Rosa Original Certified Market for a long time. I think that might was that your first market job here?
Actually, Sebastopol. Well, I have to remember. I think Sebastopol was first.
Oh.
I know Sebastopol was before Santa Rosa.
Oh, okay.
Because some of the people who worked in Santa Rosa called me and asked me if I would come over there.
Okay.
Now, and they were my vendors at Sebastopol Market.
Okay. You had been living in Oregon. When did you come to Sonoma County?
I came here in 1990, maybe 1991, somewhere in there.
And what were you doing in Oregon before?
Living on the land.
Okay.
We lived in the woods. I was married at the time, and we had a wood products business. So we would buy contracts from different people and thin second growth. And then we had a pole peeler, and we'd peel the poles, and then my husband would make pole barns and fences and stuff out of that.
Wow.
Or we'd sell it, you know, to people. And I loved living in Oregon. I loved it.
I ran
a chainsaw. I ran the, you know, pole peeling machine.
Where were you?
That was so
much
fun.
What part of Oregon?
Southern Oregon, Selma, in between Grants Pass and Cave Junction.
Oh, okay.
On Illinois River.
Okay.
Fabulous river. Fabulous river. I mean, one of the most fantastic rivers that I've ever experienced.
Illinois River.
Illinois.
Didn't know it.
Yeah.
And what brought you to Sonoma County?
My mother died, and my sister was here.
That's Barbara Iannoli.
Yeah, Barbara. And then my father came out here. My mother and father moved to, you know, whatever you call it, retired to Florida from Rhode Island when he quit working. And then when she died, he came out here. And my sister said, I wish you'd come help me with him. And my kids were going into high school. Two of my kids were going into high school. And, you know, Selma, Oregon, I mean, you can survive high school in Selma, Oregon, but it's pretty limited. And so we said, okay, you know, and we were sick of the pole business. Art in particular, my husband was particularly sick of the pole business. And so we said, okay, we'll go to California. So we came here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, things lined up
things
to bring
lined
you,
yes,
to move
things,
you.
Things
yeah.
lined up.
Yeah.
And then you quickly started working for the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Was that the mid-90s?
Well, not very long after I came here. I mean, I was working in a law office. I'm a paralegal. And you can earn a living as a paralegal.
Yeah.
It's pretty good money.
I actually did that for a while.
Yeah, it's pretty good money. And, you know, it's a skill that I can. And I learned it. Oh, my God. I learned it in Oregon. When we stopped working in the woods the last year before I left, I was working for, he had been the DA. He had been raised in O'Brien, Oregon, which is, you know, redneck bad country. And then he began the DA. So he knew every criminal in town. So, and then he went into private practice. So then I was working for him, went into private practice. So then when I came here, I started getting law office jobs. But there, it's really, you know, you're inside 40 hours a week and, you know, you're just thinking. And so I started growing plants and selling them at the Sebastopol Market.
Oh, really?
That's how I started.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah, that's how I started. So, you know, like a good day was $50. But it was, you know, a purpose that was, you know, more fun than for sure writing legal briefs. So then when the market fell apart, I mean, it was very small. There were like 8 or 10 vendors, something like that.
Do you remember who the manager was at that point?
For a while, Jennifer, who used to be with Laguna Farms, was.
Right.
And then a woman named Sophie. And when Sophie had it, it all totally fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I was selling plants, and I went around and said, you know, do we want to keep this or not? And so I had a meeting at my house, and everybody said, okay, we'll keep it. So I became president of the board. And Rika Rasmussen,
yes,
who was working for Kundi, for Sara Lee Kundi at the time, mm-hmm. on their farm. Because Sara Lee had
the farmery.
Yeah, the farmery.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hired her. And I learned a lot from Rika. She
mm-hmm.
she knew a lot. And I learned a lot from her. And so ultimately, her mother got sick and she moved to Southern California. So
yeah, I think she's from Solvang.
Yeah, yeah. And so then I said, okay, I'll just everybody said, why don't you just be the manager, Paula?
So that's that was probably 98, something like that.
I've been doing it for 23 years. So if you do the math, somewhere back there, somewhere, 93, 94.
Okay.
So then, you know, there were 10 vendors. We were open like 3 or 4 months out of the year. It was really easy. I made $300 a month. And then, and the people who did it, there were some really interesting pioneer types people, and there are some people who are still here. Orchard Farms is still here. Mm-hmm. Mom, Pa is still here. But it's changed a lot over time. I mean, actually, the people who run the coffee truck used to have a vegetable farm, and they were there, Lorraine and Neil. So anyway, so then it changed over time. Oh, one of my favorite, there were two old men who, can I tell stories?
Absolutely.
Joe Pence, the dentist, opera singer, potato grower, who drank apple cider vinegar every day and swore that it made him live to be 90. He would come, and he was a total flirt. He would flirt with all the women. I mean, not that there was that many. It was a small customer base. But he would sell his potatoes, and this other guy, and they sold their potatoes for $1 a pound. And one Sunday, Jackie and her dad from Tamales, my God, I'm going to forget his name right now, come driving on with a truckload of potatoes, and can I sell my potatoes. And this is Tamales potatoes, so I went, oh, that's, you know, history. That's California. That's Northern California history, Tamales potatoes.
Absolutely.
So I said, yeah, sure. So I hate it that I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, so he's selling his potatoes for 25 cents a pound, right?
Wow.
And the two old boys who are selling it for $1 a pound go up in arms, of course. So I have to go explain to the guy at the end, you know, these guys are upset with you, and if you're going to come back, you should think about price. So what he said to me, he said, well, my granddaddy got a penny a pound. I thought 25 cents was a lot of money. This is in like 1998 or something like
that. $3.50 a pound for potatoes.
Right,
now.
Right. So what do you say to that? You haven't been on a Tamales ever?
Yeah, really.
So anyway, he did raise his price. But this was kind of how the beginning. It was just this little world. And then we started extending the season a little bit. And more farmers came and started learning how to extend the season for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 5 years ago, we went year-round.
Uh-huh.
And but it was a good call.
It was very so gradual.
Yeah, it was very
a few
gradual.
More vendors, a few more vendors,
right.
A few more weeks, an
right.
earlier opening and earlier right. closing until, right. I mean, to me, that's the best thing that's happened in Sebastopol is having the market year-round. I'm so thrilled by that.
It was amazing. People showed up. I mean, there used to be, there was no bread, there was no meat, there were no eggs. There was nothing else except vegetables. Mm-hmm. That was it in the beginning. And then now it's developed, and it's developed because people are doing interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
During the last sort of economic bust, when the 80s or whatever, a lot of people started doing interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still happening. That was a, you know, that was a glut mm-hmm. during that period. But it's still happening. People mm-hmm. are doing creative, interesting things.
Yeah. So you did Sebastopol, and then you became, what was next? Was Santa Rosa Original next?
I started working on Wednesday Night Downtown.
Okay.
I did that for a couple, 2 or 3 years. And then I think it was Thursday night when I was working there. And that was fun. It was more of a farmer's market then. There was
right, yeah. When the first 2 or 3 years,
it was more of a farmer's market. But it was a party. But it was a farmer's market. So I started working there, and then when Santa Rosa came up after that, so then I started working in Santa Rosa, and the offshoots of Santa Rosa is the Wick Farmer's Market, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the woman who operates the WIC program, WIC, Women's, Infants, and Children, is the WIC stands for Women's, Infants, and Children, and mm-hmm. it's directed toward women's, infants, and children to have them eat better, and they get coupons from the government to buy food. So it was easy for us to be right there. They come out of the office with their coupons, and they come to the farmer's market. So that was pretty easy mm-hmm. to make that happen. And then, West End and I worked in Cotati for a while.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You did the Cotati market.
A little while. And I worked actually in Napa in Calistoga for a while. But I didn't like going that far away from home.
Yeah, that's a drive.
It was too far.
But then somewhere in there, it was before the Cotati Market, you started doing Santa Rosa Original.
Yeah, it was before Cotati.
Because that was really when I got to know you.
At the Santa Rosa Original?
Yeah, I mean, I got to know you both, but it was always, what's the market manager's name again? Mm-hmm. It's Paula, right? Can someone point her out? Partly because I didn't, I tended for a very long time to keep a low profile. Mm-hmm. I did not like to draw attention to myself or what I did or anything. I just wanted to be a customer. But then eventually we started talking. And one of the reasons that we started talking or that I reached out to you just in little ways was I watched the markets transform under your leadership. And I feel like I have a pretty broad view of that because I visit so many farmers markets.
Right.
And I know that the Sebastopol Farmers Market was not always, I have to go there at all. Mm-hmm. It was like, do I feel like it today or do I not? And I wouldn't go and spend 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Santa Rosa. It's like, oh, do I feel like driving to Santa Rosa? I really need some leeks, but I'm often disappointed when I get there. And then all of a sudden, and I noticed it initially in Santa Rosa more because suddenly the market is more vibrant. And there are more vendors, and there's more stuff on all the vendors' tables. And it just, it transformed from, it's nice to go and nice to support farmers, to, I cannot possibly miss this. And I really credit you with the sort of deep knowledge that you have, both of farmers, of balance. No one I know understands farmers and farmers markets more than you do. Every time I think, oh, Paula, I don't like this, you should. You come out with something that's like, oh, I was wrong. You are right. You explained that to me, and I will never forget it. Your depth of understanding of farmers is astonishing.
I don't know what that is. It's just sort of a gift, or I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it seems like
it's experience,
just so,
too.
It just seems to be so deeply ingrained, part of your intuitive faculty.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I mean, how could you? There's a lot of cute boys out there. You know what I mean? How can you turn them all down? You know?
There is that.
I mean, they don't know that I'm an old lady and think they're cute, which is even better. Because,
That's a fun part of it. But you also understand something essential about what it takes to balance a market.
It's a key word.
Yeah, and if you can explain some of that, because I think people, you hear, well, I couldn't get into my own market.
Right, I get that. Yeah.
So there's all kinds of considerations.
There are.
And how do you weigh how...
There's a lot of... One of the things is I try to bring in a new... Sebastopol is limited in space, so I don't have as much freedom as I did in Santa Rosa, because Santa Rosa had space. But I try to bring in a new farmer or two every year, because you want to give the younger generation a chance. It takes them 5 years to learn the curve, so you want to give them the opportunity. And so that's kind of a key precept. I watch what's going on. Like, I walk the market about 11, between 11 and 12, and I see what's on the table. If there's no lettuce, if there's, you know, what's out there. And so then I can decide, okay, obviously I could use a little more.
Could
use
that
the other thing, because, you know, they're selling out by 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock. And so you make that kind of thought by watching. You have to be watching pretty carefully. And you try to get good quality food with farmers that you know are committed. I mean, I like farmers who have a religious commitment to what they're doing, and a lot of them do now. Not all of them. I mean, you could get farmers from the valley, and it's a different ballgame, because they're big, and it's a different thing when you're big, or if you've got 5 acres in your backyard, it's a whole different thing. So I tend to lean in the direction of small. It's really about community. It's about supporting each other. And that is the sort of the message, the subliminal message, that is part of what I do on every level with them. I mean, I'm always kind of your community, be good to each other. Your community don't, you're in competition, but really you're a community and you'll be stronger. I mean, all those corporate executives play golf together and take the president out to dinner together. You know, they know about community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You are a community. That's important. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big piece of why the market is good, because people are happy, because mm-hmm. they feel respected. They make money. You know, they're all doing all right. You know, they're not making a killing, but they're making a living.
And that's a crucial aspect of the importance of balance.
Right, right.
Potatoes. You don't accept 10 potato vendors because then no one makes money.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and, you
and that's
to,
a big deal.
That seems to,
seems to
be in your
right.
blood.
You watch that. You can tell by looking when you, and then they tell you. You know, I mean, they don't hesitate to complain if, you know, they think I've made a wrong call, and sometimes I make wrong calls still. You know, so then I try to fix those, and I when people come. I'm pretty clear that, you know, this is experimental. We're going to try this. It may or may not work out. Depends on, you know, how things look. And then generally I do okay in terms of letting people in and including new people. But I've been doing it for so long that I have I have the experience to use. So anyway. I can't think of anything else.
Okay, why don't we take one more musical break, and we'll be right back with more Talk with Paula Downing.
It's not very far from sulfur to sugar cane. Everywhere I travel, the pretty girls call my name. I give them a squeeze and shoot. I buy the hot-headed husbands a long cool drink. You better come up smelling sweet, 'cause you're a long time stinking. It's a little too late to complain. It's not very far from sulfur to sugar cane. Now if you catch my eye and find that it runs down your leg, it's like striking a match pretty hard upon a powder keg. They tell you from the borders to the waters of the Gulf, if you take all the sugar, you will end up in the sulfur, and you'll burn it. Hello, baby, I'm a pleased to meet you. I wouldn't do you wrong, honey. Very far from sulfur to sugar cane. It's not very far from sulfur to sugar cane. When your eyes fill up with brine, 'cause you're drowning in wine, it's like the last days of Rome. Mississippi, you can run out of money, you can run out of pity, throw open your purse until you're crying for mercy, then go to Alabama, escape Louisiana, I'm digging like a miner, North and South Carolina, and then if you continue, you will end up in Virginia, the women in Poughkeepsie take their clothes off and they're tipsy, but in Albany, you know they look. Sugar cane.
could find a piano here in Bloomington, Indiana, I would play it with my toes until the girls all take their clothes off. The women knock upon my door in odd and even numbers, but none of them as wild as I discovered in Columbus. I gave up married women cause I heard it was a sin. But now I'm back in Pittsburgh, I might take it up again because they knock a little. Very far from sulfur to sugar cane. But I'm not here to hurt you, I'm here to steal your virtue. Down in Bridgeport, the women will kill you for sport. But in Worcester, Massachusetts, they love my sauce. The women in Poughkeepsie take their clothes off when they're tipsy. But I hear in Ypsilanti, they don't wear any panties. Once they toggle with the finest champagne, they hitch up their skirts and exclaim. It's not very far, sugar. It's not very far, sugar. It's not very far, sugar. Sugar. It's not very far from sulfur to sugar cane.
Ah, sulfur to sugar cane. Could I see that album cover, please? Thank you, Mike. This is, that's right. Secret, Profane, and Sugar Cane. Came out, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Really a great, great collection of stuff. But, I mean, almost everything he's done is a great collection. I love that some of his stuff I don't like because he experiments all over the place at times.
He does.
That one didn't really work, but
yeah.
I still admire him for doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. What did I say I wanted to do next?
I don't know.
God, I said something. What was it? So, well, let's talk. We don't have that much time left. You are going to be passing the torch.
I am.
When you help found the extremely now successful West End Farmers Market, you found a manager, you set that up, and it's thriving.
It's good.
It is doing really, really well. And that, of course, takes place at almost the same time as the Sebastopol Market.
Yeah.
It now opens at 9:30 and it goes until 2. It's on Donahue Street,
yeah,
right adjacent to the De Turk Round Barn.
Yeah.
No, it's thriving.
Good.
Really doing absolutely great. And I'm going to be there on November 8th. I'm going to be there November 8th for a book signing.
Good.
But yeah, it's just, it was an instant, it was one of those things that people in that neighborhood were waiting for
a market to happen.
And they completely support it.
Yeah. Well, when Santa Rosa had to move, I wanted to go to Railroad Square, but we couldn't get it together.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, the right place didn't manifest. And so then we went to Wells Fargo. But at that point, I thought, you know what? I should make this fantasy happen. And I had met the market manager several years before because there was a developer.
Which market manager?
Alan from
Rivers. Oh, you'd met Alan
years before because a developer was, you know, going to develop the whole thing and put right there where the train is coming and put houses and make a farmer's market and make a food center. I mean, it was a really major fantasy.
I was in some of those meetings.
Yeah.
So it was before
it was
the guy had a heart attack, the guy who was heading.
Yeah, and then they couldn't get financing and the market, the financial market crashed.
Right, and then the food, the big elaborate food center, that fell apart.
Yeah. So I had met him during those talks because there was quite a few days of those talks in the beginning. And so then I thought, okay, I'm going to call him and try to make a farmer's market. Sundays in Railroad Square, I always had that sort of fantasy. Sundays in Railroad Square, that would be so nice because it's such a beautiful little place, Railroad Square. So I called him, and then he knew the neighborhood because he lives there.
Right.
And so between us, we made that farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel good about that farmer's market.
Yeah,
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. You should. It's really a great market.
Yeah.
But now you are in the process of training your replacement in Sebastopol.
I'm pretty relieved, too. I'm tired. I've been doing it for 23 years. I'm done. Yeah. I mean, put it on an event every week, you know.
Yeah.
Made me tired.
Of course. You have to get up. What time do you have to get up?
I get up early, but it's the process, you know, like.
You schlep a lot of stuff.
I schlep a lot
of
stuff.
You schlep tables, signs, all kinds of stuff.
But it's the people stuff that, you know, and the events, and you got to keep it dynamic. I mean, I got, you know, lady teaching kids cooking classes next week. We had the Pomo last week. We had
cooking classes for kids next week?
For kids, yeah.
With Lotta?
Her name is Sorrell.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, next month I've got a couple major events coming. CalFresh people have a special event for them. And Lotta's going to teach how to make chapatis next month on the 15th.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
There's something I think you should do on November 1st.
What? Oh.
I just thought about this while I was driving here. It just popped into my head fully formed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's November 1st.
Yes.
So it's the day after Halloween.
Oh,
it's the day that we go back to nature's real time. I think you should make it a pajama day at the market.
Oh.
And I think it was just that I thought, oh, it'd be so nice just to go to the market in my pajamas. And you know, when Quicksilver, I think it was Quicksilver, was the art gallery and little shop was in, I think it was Quicksilver, it was in downtown Sebastopol. She would have once or twice a year, and it was always seems like it was in the dead of winter, she would have a pajama sale, and it would start at 5 in the morning. And if you came between 5 and 6 in the morning in your pajamas, you got something like 60% off everything. And then if you came between 6 and 7, it would be 50, you know, it was incremental. And I just thought, it's like, yeah. So I was just thinking, oh, we should have a pajama day at the farmer's market on November 1st.
All right. As long as I don't have to show up in my pajamas.
You don't have to show up in it because you're working. But you should make a pajama day.
Let me think about that. It's next week, so I don't know if I can make it happen.
No, it's 2 weeks.
2 weeks. That's right. You're right. Two weeks.
It's 2 weeks. Plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah, plenty of time. See, it's these kind of things. And you need to do them because they make community. And that's what the market is all about. And it's a constant reminder that we are in this together, and if we forget that, then we lose, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to remember we're in this together.
Yeah. Now, are there any, before we talk about your replacement, are there any figures? I know sometime in the last number of weeks, there was a report probably from Sonoma County Council on Economics or whatever it is about how now more money is being spent in Sonoma County in restaurants than in supermarkets.
Really?
And what I've wondered is, and I haven't had a chance to get to the right person, did that factor in money spent at farmers markets? And is the shift going from supermarkets to restaurants, or is the shift going from supermarkets to closer to the source?
I don't know the answer to that question. I know that I just had to do, you know, I got this grant from the government, which you could get a waitress job, and it's easier to make money as a waitress than it is just to get a government grant, all the paperwork they want you to do. But anyway, I got the grant, and they just asked, one of the things they just asked me is how much money goes through the market every month. And I think we move $100,000 through the market every month. I think
wow.
so.
Awesome.
I thought that was conservative.
Uh-huh.
50 vendors.
Is that how many we have now, 50?
45 to 50, 45. Depending on the week. You know, somewhere between $500 and $1,000 a vendor. Some of them a little more, some of them a little less. But then when I added up, I went, wow. So we're moving some money through that market. Mm-hmm. We should, you know, people think in terms of money, so we should. Yeah. That's a selling point for us, is that we handle a lot of money.
Yeah. What was the grant for?
The grant is to match, if you get CalFresh, which used to be food stamps, it's CalFresh now, then I can match some of your spend.
Oh, you got matching funds.
We got matching funds.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Because I know
great.
You had them for, you have to do lots of paperwork to get them. Oh, I know West End has had it.
Yeah.
I think Santa Rosa Original has had it.
No, they none of no? the only ones who've gotten the it's called Finney Grant Federal Nutrition Insecurity Program or something. The only ones who've had that are us and the Vets Building. And that's it.
Oh.
In the county.
In the county. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're the only ones who went, were stupid enough to go through all the paperwork. I mean, it was hours of my life, hours.
Yeah. And you know, we all love paperwork so much. Well, we've just got really a couple minutes. So your replacement, Martin Hamilton.
He comes from New College. He's from New College. I've known him for years. Our kids went to high school together. He's really great. At the people stuff, when my father quit his job, they replaced him with two people. I'm thinking we maybe should do that. I think really? There's so what? Much to do.
How would you divide it?
More some of the administrative stuff, maybe. Okay. Uh-huh. It's a lot. And yeah. I don't know. I mean, he says to me all the time, how did you do this? So that sort of makes me think, well, maybe he needs help yeah. if he feels that way. Yeah.
To put on a market one day a week, big market, 45 to 50 vendors, how much time does it? I mean, some people, when we've had some controversy, as you and I both know really well about some of the controversy that's yeah. happened, a lot of people said, what does a market manager do anyway?
Right.
Walk around right. and collect money. I could do that.
Right.
So how many hours a week does it take, not counting the hours you spend at the market?
At least 30.
Okay.
To do a good job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as soon as I take on a special event, that adds to it.
Sure.
So it average. I mean, I could be lazy and doing 20, mm-hmm. but generally speaking, it's at least 30.
And on that note, we are out of time.
Thank you, dear.
You are going to have to come back. I'm nowhere near done exploring your remarkable mind and experiences.
Thank you.
So, but oh, no, one
I
more thing.
Flattered. What?
I want you to tell me who's going to be on next week.
Oh, it's the American Livestock Conservancy, and they're having a fundraiser, and hopefully Jim Reichardt from the Duck Farm will be here. And then a couple of 4-H kids who raised turkeys for the 4-H, the Slow Food Turkey Project. And I'm not sure who else.
Okay.
But it's about the livestock.
American Livestock Conservancy.
Yeah. Learning about local meat is a really important thing to learn about. So I would listen if you want to do anything else.
Yeah. There's a lot going on with local meat. That'll be a fabulous episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Mike, the fabulous engineer. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming.